Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Akev. Please mention the podcast to your friends. Word of mouth is the number one best marketing tool for the podcast, and your friends will appreciate learning from you about the podcast and also help them out with the technical issues of how to download it and listen to it each week. Thanks very much. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Akev. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. I would like to dedicate today's podcast to everyone who participated in our executive seminar 3 weeks ago in Pardes in Jerusalem. This was the largest group that we ever had, 30 participants. And in particular, I would like to note David Cuny and Marty Fleshner, who have been religiously listening to our podcasts for the last few years, and finally were able to make it to Pardes in Jerusalem this year for our seminar. The theme of this year's seminar was Rabbi Akiva. And in one of our sessions, we noted that Rabbi Akiva expounded on the verse in last week's parsha, which we are familiar with from the first paragraph of the Shema, which says, "You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." And Rabbi Akiva said, "What does it mean, with all your soul? Even if God takes your soul, love God." In other words, be prepared to give up your life for your belief in God. And in fact, Rabbi Akiva practiced what he preached. And we're told in a Talmudic statement in Masechet Brachot how Rabbi Akiva was taken out, tortured to death. And at that very moment, he recited the Shema, smiling. And his students looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I am happy that I'm finally able to practice what I preach." Rabbi Akiva's exposition of the verse is the basis for martyrdom in Judaism, the standard, the bar, which is set to the highest limit of what is expected of a Jew. But in fact, today, I don't want to talk about martyrdom. That was in our seminar. But I would like to talk about something which is in our parsha, which I think is an important compliment. A number of years ago, I did a podcast where I said, the essence of our parsha is about a covenantal relationship which is created between God and the Jewish people, which ultimately is supposed to guarantee our inheritance of the land. And in fact, the parsha begins in chapter 7, verse 12. "And it will be that if you observe my laws, guard them and do them, then God will guard for you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers." And in verse 13, "He will love you, he will bless you, he will increase you." And then we go on in the following verses to describe a whole series of things which God will give us, how God will empower us. I bring up these verses only to show that the parsha begins with a description of the covenantal relationship that God wishes to establish. If you will do this, I will do that. And in fact, later on in the parsha, in chapter 11, we have the second paragraph of the Shema, which also describes a covenantal relationship. "If you will observe the commandments, which I am commanding you, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, then God will bring the rains in their proper time." What I would like to focus on today is actually the second word in the parsha. It says, "V'haya," in chapter 7, verse 12, to go back to what we said before, "V'haya ekev tishma'un." The word ekev is a very unusual word, especially in this context, especially when we look at the parallel verse that appears in chapter 11 in the Shema. The more normal wording would have been V'haya im tishmeun, and it will be if you listen to my laws. Im shamoa tishmeun. But once again, instead of the word Akev, there should have been the word im, if. What does Akev mean? Now, on the simple pshat level, you could understand Akev to mean in response to. And then say, and it will be in response to your observing my laws, the end of the verse where it says, and God will guard for you the covenant, which really makes it sound as an if-then clause. If you do this, then there will be that. Okay? Every action has a reaction. But it still is a little bit troubling. In every other place, we don't use the word Akev. We use the word im. Hence, there is a rabbinic comment which Rashi brings up in this verse, which says, what is the meaning of the verse? And I translate Rashi. If you will listen to the light mitzvot, the easy mitzvot, the mitzvot that a person threshes, and maybe I'll say tramples, ba'akevav, with his heel. The rabbis say the word akev, or in modern Hebrew, the word akev, means a heel. And they say, why is this word being used over here? Because it describes the type of mitzvot that people step on, people trample. In Rashi's words, the easy mitzvot, the ones that we would say very easily fall by the wayside, which would then mean that in our parsha, what God is asking of the Jewish people is not to be a Rabbi Akiva, not to strive for the bar which is set in last week's parsha, to love God with all your soul, with all your might, be prepared to give up everything for God. What our parsha is asking for is love God, relate to God in the little things. In the little things that can so easily be trampled on. In the little things that are very often taken for granted and get lost. Our parsha is focusing not on the extraordinary situations of where a person has to make supreme sacrifices, but on the day-to-day drudgery of routine. And I would like to illustrate this with two examples which come up in our parsha. The first example is in chapter 10, verse 12. Moses says to the Jewish people, and now Israel, what does God ask of you? Except for, or maybe better translated, the only thing which God asks is that you fear the Lord your God, you walk in his ways, you love him, you serve him with all your heart, with all your soul. And in the next verse, to observe the mitzvot of God and his statutes that I am commanding you today, that it should be good for you. Now, on a certain level, one could say Moses starts out by saying, what does God ask of you? And then when you look at what God asks of you, it's unbelievable. Fear God, walk in his ways, love God, serve God with all your heart, with all your soul. And in fact, there is a passage in the Talmud, in Masechet Brachot, which says, it sounds like Moshe is trivializing what God wants. And in the language of the Talmud, is the fear of God such a small thing that Moses says, what is God asking of you? And the response in the Talmud is, yes, vis-a-vis Moshe, it's a small thing. Because Moshe had fear of God. So for him, it was so natural. It was so easy. Big deal. So that's what God is asking of you. Now, that statement in the Talmud is really looking at the verse on the pshat level and actually has a problem with it. But there is a drash, one could say perhaps a reading into this verse, which is done by my namesake, Rabbi Meir. In another tractate of the Talmud, Masechet Menachot, that deals with meal offerings. And Rabbi Meir says, a person is obligated to make 100 blessings every day, as it is written, and now Israel, what does the Lord God ask of you? The word for what is ma, and Rabbi Meir makes a play on words and says, it's as if he says, don't read it as ma, but read it as mea. Mea meaning 100. And then Moses is saying, what does God want of you? All that he wants is make 100 blessings a day. I admit, this is not the simple reading of the text. But on the other hand, Rabbi Meir perhaps is reading into this. In fact, the deeper meaning of our parsha, as reflected in the opening words. 100 blessings a day. What's the big deal? I said earlier, there are certain mitzvot which are easy mitzvot, and which a lot of times get lost by the wayside. One of those mitzvot are blessings. There are many, many things that we make blessings on. First and foremost, food blessings. Every time one eats, one is supposed to make a blessing before they eat. One makes a blessing after they go to the bathroom. If you think about this, what is the purpose of these blessings? The blessings are there to enable us to acknowledge in every aspect of our day-to-day life, in every aspect of the functioning of our day-to-day life, how much we are indebted to God. When we go to the bathroom, do we think of how miraculous it is that we were able to do so? Unfortunately, I know of enough situations of people who have trouble with their bladders, who do not take it as a given that they are able to exercise their bodily functions. And what about each of us, or any of us, when all of a sudden we're constipated or have diarrhea, and your natural reaction is, what a bummer. And then you try to take some medication or you adjust your diet or... And like, what happened? How did this go wrong? Taking it for granted that, of course, we should be able to normally remove the wastes from our body. But Judaism says, don't take it for granted. Make a blessing every time you go to the bathroom. Thank God for the fact that you have the ability to do so. What does it take for somebody to make a blessing every time they go to the bathroom? It doesn't cost you anything. 15 seconds of your time. Trivial. Easy mitzvah. And yet perhaps because it's easy, there's a certain contempt for it. When we eat food, we make a blessing before. We bless the food as a way of acknowledging this is a gift of God, as a way of asking permission. Please, God, can I eat this? If I acknowledge you, let me eat it now. The blessings that we make before food, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, no sweat. And yet how many times do people forget to do it? Or just feel, why bother? When I said earlier that Rabbi Meir saw the blessings as a deeper reading of the text, if you go back to that verse in chapter 10, where it says, what does the Lord God ask of you? Chapter 10, verse 12. He just asks you to fear God. And remember, there was the statement in the Talmud which says, what? Fear of God? Fear of God is a tremendous thing to ask. Comes along Rabbi Meir and says, you know what? Fear of God is not that difficult. Just make a blessing. Every time you make a blessing, that is an expression of your fear of God. How is that? Fear of God means that I acknowledge that there is a God above me. I acknowledge that there is a God who I am indebted to. I acknowledge that there is a God that I am accountable to. I acknowledge that I am not the center of the universe. If I now go back a step, I would say, you know what? Yes, that is what makes it so hard. Because it isn't easy for people to have to acknowledge that there is something above them. Something that they're accountable to. People all too often become very self-absorbed. And as a result of that, that's why they have difficulty making these blessings. The idea which I've just articulated is actually to be found earlier in the parsha. Also with respect to blessings, but this time a blessing that is explicitly stated in the text. This is in chapter 8, verse 8. It says there, V'achalta v'savata, you will eat and you will be full. U'veirachta et Hashem Elokecha, you will bless the Lord your God for the good land which He has given you. This verse is the source of the law of Birkat HaMazon. The blessing that we make after we have a meal. A meal as defined by the rabbis after we eat bread. And by the way, the rabbis base it on the verse which came before, in verse 9, which says, the land that you are coming to is a land which you will be able to eat bread without difficulty. The fact that it mentions specifically the eating of bread, and in the following verse says, you will eat and be full. So the rabbi sees the basis for saying that when one eats bread, they then have to make a blessing afterwards, called Birkat HaMazon, grace after meals. It would seem to be that when it comes to food blessings, this is the only blessing which is actually a Torah requirement. All the other blessings are rabbinic. So that, in fact, when I said earlier, Rabbi Meir, who inferred from the verse, what does God ask of you? What does He ask? 100 blessings. It is reading into the verse because, in fact, there is no Torah obligation of making 100 blessings. It's only rabbinic. But Rabbi Meir's reading into the verse is an extension of our verse, which is stated explicitly. The Torah says, when you eat and when you're full, thank God. Express your gratitude. Recognize the blessing of being satiated. I just want to insert, for me, this is actually something which speaks very profoundly to me. Perhaps because of the fact that I am the child of Holocaust survivors. And although my parents never discussed it with me, certainly when I was young, but one of the values that they instilled in me from a very early age was to not waste food, to really be thankful for whatever I have to eat. Unfortunately, I think that people who went through the Holocaust can actually relate to this verse. They can actually understand what it means to be grateful and thankful for the ability to be full and to not be starving. Unfortunately, I think people who grow up in Western societies that are very affluent take satiety for granted. And this is not a new phenomenon. The Torah itself in our parsha says subsequently in that very section, in chapter 8, verse 11, beware lest you forget the Lord your God. Verse 12, lest you eat and be full, and you build nice homes, and you settle in them, and everything that you have increases. And then in verse 14, and your heart becomes arrogant, you forget God. And if I jump to verse 17, and you say in your heart, it is my strength and the power of my hand that made for me all this wealth. And in verse 18 it says, and you should remember the Lord your God, because it is He who has given you the strength, the power to produce all this. These verses are articulating explicitly what I mentioned earlier, This is ultimately the difficulty of somebody being unable to bless God, to thank God for all that he has been given. In the language of the Pasuk, to thank God not only for the food, to thank God for the good land that he has given us. The feeling of arrogance, the feeling of hubris, the feeling that it's me who did it. I'm not indebted to anybody. I don't owe anyone. It's me from beginning to end. The idea of patting oneself on the back. This is the difficulty which our parsha is addressing. Our parsha expects an individual to transcend themselves, to be able to realize they are not the center of the world, to be able to show in little ways that acknowledgement of something above them. By the way, I would like to emphasize, in the Birkat HaMazon, there are three blessings which form the core of the Birkat HaMazon, with an additional fourth. In the first blessing of Birkat HaMazon, it's Hazanat HaOlam, the one who nourishes the world. In the first blessing, we basically thank God for the food that God has given us, which is the natural blessing that we should make after we've eaten and are full. But then all of a sudden, based on the verse, we have a second blessing in which we thank God not only for the food, but for the land which God has given us. Which means it's not only the fact that we have this food that we just ate, but the fact that we have a land which empowers us, which gives us the ability to grow our own produce, which gives us the ability to be full, which is not looking just at this particular meal that I ate, but seeing a much larger picture. And then when we get to the third blessing, we thank God for Jerusalem. We thank God for the Davidic dynasty. What does Jerusalem symbolize? What does the Davidic dynasty symbolize? On the one hand, it could be the symbol of God's presence in our midst. On the other hand, it could be the symbol of political sovereignty, independence. Not only do I have a land, but I am sovereign over my land. And once again, that's empowering. It's not just that I have a land, but I have the ability to do whatever with that land. The question is, when we eat, how grateful are we for the food? But how much do we also think about what goes beyond the food? Of all of the elements which perhaps enable us to not just have a one-time meal, but on an ongoing level, to be able to continue eating and being full. To what degree is that we think not only about our own eating, but we think about other people's eating? To what degree is it that we think not only about our eating, but about other things which happen in our lives? To what degree is it that in their Birkat HaMazon we're thanking God not only for the food, but maybe even for the ability to be autonomous in our lives? Freedom of mobility. Freedom of access. I mentioned that the core of the Birkat HaMazon is the first three blessings. The fourth blessing, is a blessing which speaks about God being good and doing good, and according to the rabbis in Masechet Brachot, is an add-on. It was added in the aftermath of the Bar Kochva rebellion. Something, by the way, which we also did in this year's seminar. In the Bar Kochva rebellion, in the year 132 to 135, and primarily 135, in which the Jewish people rebelled against the Roman authorities, were crushed by the Roman authorities, in which Jewish sovereignty was destroyed, was basically put online for over 1800 years until the creation of the State of Israel, where not only was Jewish sovereignty destroyed, but a large segment of the population destroyed. The ancient Holocaust, a massacre of the Jewish population. In the aftermath of this tragedy, the rabbis instituted the blessing of Hatov HaMeitiv, that despite the tragedy which befell the Jewish people, thank God, bless God, bless God for being good. What good is there? The rabbi said, we bless God for the fact that all those people who were butchered in Beitar were ultimately allowed to be buried. We bless God for the fact that those bodies that were lying around for months did not putrefy. If you think about this for a moment, it's again an unbelievable thing that in the midst of a tragedy, and I use the term a Holocaust, that we're able to look at trivial things that all of a sudden become very big, that all of a sudden we thank God for. Even when it seems that we have no place to thank God. In fact, there is a place. Even when it seems that there is no good in our lives, we find some good. Our parsha speaks about all the blessings which God will bring upon us. Our parsha speaks about eating, being full, being satisfied, being affluent. Our parsha talks about when that happens, bless God, recognize God, don't take it for granted. That's how you show your fear of God. Not a big deal, it's a little thing, but a little thing that's very, very symbolic, very significant, especially when it's done constantly, not only day to day, but moment by moment. The blessing of Hatova Meitiv is in a certain way the inverse. In an extraordinary situation, even when it seems all is lost, even when one could say, I have nothing, so why bless? The answer is, because even when it looks like you have nothing, you still may have something. And even that something is worth blessing God for. I want to add one last point, and this is actually not something from our parsha, but it's from a later parsha, which I think carries the same message. In chapter 26, the very beginning of chapter 26, we have a series of laws that have to do with the first fruits. The first fruits which are grown in the land of Israel are supposed to be brought to the temple. And there is a whole ceremony that needs to be done. Ultimately, these fruits are given to the priest that is officiating at that moment. And there is a whole declaration which is recited, which we've actually discussed in previous podcasts. And this declaration, in fact, is actually the basis of extended exposition in the Haggadah at the Seder on Pesach night. But I just want to actually look at one verse which appears at the end of that section. This is chapter 26 in Deuteronomy, verse 11. After it talks about the bringing of the first fruits, the recitation, the declaration that needs to be made, the placing of the first fruits by the altar, which will subsequently be taken by the priest to be eaten. It then says in verse 11, and you shall rejoice in all the good which God has given you, you and your family, you and the Levite and the stranger that's in your midst. And if we go by the simple reading of the text, what the text is saying there is, once you bring the first fruits, now you can go back home and eat all the rest. And the Torah is saying, and enjoy it. Be happy with it. Be happy with the good which God has given you and your family. But think about it. What's it saying? It's saying, presumably, the first fruits are a fraction of your produce that you give to God. But you have a tremendous amount back home, which you're going to be eating. Enjoy it. But don't just enjoy it. Enjoy it as the good which God has given you, which I think implicitly is saying, when you eat it, recognize God. And here, I would say, it's not only make a blessing. Here we're not talking about a blessing. Here we're talking about just be happy with it. Appreciate it for what it's worth. And once again, I'm sorry to belabor this point, I think I've actually mentioned in previous podcasts. Something which I see a lot of times by children growing up nowadays, and it actually is by my children as well. Sometimes you'll make a meal, and then you have kids that are very, very fussy, very picky. And then you'll serve them something. Argument's sake, I don't know. Spaghetti. Spaghetti with a certain kind of sauce. And then the child will respond, "This is revolting. This is terrible. I don't want to eat this." And then you come along and say, "You know what? It's really not so terrible. In fact, it might even be tasty. And you know what? Even if it isn't that tasty, not the end of the world. You could still eat it." Or how many times has a child and an adult taken a bite out of something? Take one bite, and then you just push the plate away or dump whatever it is into the garbage. And I come back to what I said earlier. How much do we really value the fact that we have all this good, all of this abundance? Or how much is it that rather than saying, "Look at all this abundance that we have," we all of a sudden become very fussy and "I don't like this and I don't like that," and then, you know, and take a bite and then the rest you can just throw away because, you know, I don't feel like eating it. What are you doing? You're taking all that good and you're destroying it. All this bounty which God has given you, which God wants to make you happy with, you're just not happy. And not only are you not happy, but rather than seeing it as a blessing, you see it as a curse. And in fact, it's very striking. In the end of that parsha, Parshat Ki Tavo, there's a section which is about blessings and curses. And one of the verses which always strikes me is that in the midst of the curses, in chapter 28, verse 16, it says, it talks about how all these curses will come and say, "Because you didn't serve the Lord your God with joy and with a good heart, as a result of a multitude of everything, instead of that you will end up serving your enemies in hunger, in thirst, in nakedness, being destitute of everything." These words are very, very powerful. These words highlight how seriously we need to take the little things in life, the little things that very easily we can trample. And I would like to end by just mentioning two things which especially are meaningful to me. Two things which I think are practical. One is prayer, the other one is study. I think there's a major problem nowadays of people who have a difficulty praying. I see this all too often in the various synagogues that I go to, of people who do everything they can to finish their prayers as quickly as possible. Of people who, when the services are going on, in the best of situations, just look bored. In the worst of situations, talk to their friends, talk to their neighbors. Do all kinds of things that, in effect, show that the service doesn't speak to them. On a certain level, prayer is an easy mitzvah. And it seems to be, it's true, there are some times when we were in a synagogue for hours and hours, that's not easy. But the fact is, I see the same phenomenon even in the afternoon daily prayer, which is only 15 minutes. It's a mindset which basically has difficulty with this little thing, which all of a sudden becomes an enormous burden. And the second thing, study of Torah. Study of Torah is a very demanding commandment. There's no limit to it. The fact is that nowadays, study of Torah has been made relatively easy. Case in point, podcasts. You just sit back, put on your earphones, have it just presented to you, laid out. You don't have to really work hard to struggle over any text. You just have somebody who's presenting you with information. Internet. You can look up all kinds of things on the internet. Somebody else has really done the legwork for you. As I mentioned earlier, the mitzvah of studying Torah has no limit. But on the other hand, on the basic level, one can fulfill studying Torah 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. And I say this to my students all the time. Carve out 15 minutes a day, every day, where you study. And you don't have to be studying things that are esoteric, and you don't have to be studying things that are totally removed from your reality. Study things that can speak to your reality. Study things that can be very easily adopted by you, assimilated into you. But just get into the regimen of studying 15 minutes a day. What's the big deal? How hard is it? Can't you find 15 minutes a day to study? This is a mitzvah kala. There are moments when people have profound, life-changing experiences. There are moments, extreme moments, when you're called upon to make the supreme sacrifices, which ultimately demonstrate one's relationship with God. But in fact, our parasha maybe is saying that the real test is in the routine. The real test is in the little things. The little things which are accessible to everybody, which anybody could do. How much do we trample on those easy things? Or how much can we say to ourselves, let's try to incorporate that into our lives? And maybe once someone adapts the easy things, all those little things can make a profound impact on who we are. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.